You're listening to Chemistry in Its Element, brought to you by Chemistry World, the magazine of the Royal Society of Chemistry.
Hello, this week's Element sees us immersed in a murder mystery. Henry Nichols.
During World War I, Agatha Christie worked in a hospital and then a pharmacy, an experience that could explain the presence of poisons in many of her plots. In The Pale Horse, a thriller published in 1961, the star of the show was thallium, also known as the poisoner's poison, because many salts of this soft, silvery metal are soluble in water, producing a colourless, odourless, and tasteless liquid with a delayed effect on its victim. Here's an excerpt from the dramatic climax in which the novel's narrator, Mark Easterbrook, solves the mystery of several unexplained deaths. I slammed back the receiver, then took it off again. I dialed the number and was lucky enough this time to get Lejeune straight away. "Listen," I said, "is Ginger's hair coming out by the roots in handfuls?"
"Well, as a matter of fact, I believe it is. High fever, I suppose."
"Fever, my foot," I said. "What Ginger's suffering from, what they've all suffered from, is thallium poisoning. Please God, may we be in time." Christie may have got the idea for her plot a few years earlier in 1957, when the KGB attempted to assassinate Nikolai Kokhlov, a former KGB assassin himself who had defected to the United States. In turn, Christie's dramatic and detailed description of the symptoms of thallium poisoning in The Pale Horse is thought to have saved at least two lives and led to the arrest and conviction of a British factory worker who had used thallium to kill his stepmother, two work colleagues, and nauseate around 70 others. It's so dangerous because thallium has similar biological properties to potassium ions, hijacking the ubiquitous sodium-potassium membrane pump to smuggle itself into cells throughout the body, interfering with the important roles played by potassium. Thallium is pretty abundant in the Earth's crust, found in several selenium-containing minerals. Indeed, it was whilst cooking up one such compound in 1861 that British chemist William Crookes noted that suddenly a bright green line flashed into view and quickly disappeared. He knew he was onto a new element and called it thallium, after the Greek for green shoot or twig, thallos. The following year, he succeeded in isolating small quantities of the element, but nowhere near the quantities obtained by French chemist Claude-Auguste Lamy, who was working away independently with a greater bulk of raw material. When, in 1862, Lamy was awarded a medal at the International Exhibition in London for the discovery of a new and abundant source of thallium, Crookes had a fit, and it was only with his election to the Royal Society in 1863, largely on the back of his thallium work, that the cross-channel spat for priority died down. Subsequent work on the chemistry of thallium showed it to have similar properties to several other elements, including silver, mercury, and lead, so much so that French chemist Jean-Baptiste Dumas later dubbed it the ornithorhynchus, or duck-billed platypus of the metals. The raw material on which both Crookes and Lamy worked was from waste products deposited during the manufacture of sulfuric acid. The commercial production of thallium today is not dissimilar, with the metal mostly recovered as a byproduct of smelting iron, zinc, or lead sulfides to make sulfur dioxide. The resulting thallium contains the two naturally occurring stable isotopes, with around 30% of it made up of atomic mass 203, and the remaining 70% comprised of atomic mass 205. Owing to its toxic properties, thallium has been used as a rodenticide, though there are safer ways to kill rats, and the use of this chemical in the environment is now banned in many countries. Today, thallium is of greatest use to the electronics industry. In particular, the conductivity of thallium sulfide alters on exposure to infrared light, making it an important compound in photocells. Thallium bromide iodide crystals have also been used in infrared detectors. The addition of metals like thallium to glass can reduce its melting point to as low as 150 degrees centigrade. As such low melting point glasses do not shatter like normal glasses, they're particularly useful for the manufacture of electronic parts. Thallium is also being tested in high-temperature ceramic superconductors. Alongside the two stable isotopes, there are a further 23 radioisotopes, though most of them with fleeting half-lives. One of them, thallium-201, is useful in nuclear medicine. It's injected into the bloodstream and will find its way into all tissues with the help of the sodium-potassium membrane pump. This can then reveal to the clinician any part of the body not bathed in blood or where the membrane transporter is not working properly. In particular, it's used to image the blood flow to heart muscle in patients suspected of coronary artery disease. Thankfully, with a suitably short half-life of just 72 and a half hours, thallium 201 disappears from the body long before it can cause the lethal damage of the more stable isotopes. In The Pale Horse, Agatha Christie was not as explicit about the treatment for thallium poisoning as she was about its symptoms. "Do they know how to treat thallium poisoning?" asks the narrator Mark Easterbrook when he reaches the hospital where the hair-shredding Ginger has been taken.
"You don't often get a case of it,"
the investigating officer, Inspector Lejeune, tells him.
"But everything possible will be tried."
It was. And for those who like their happy endings, you'll be pleased to know that Ginger makes a full recovery from the thallium poisoning that had stricken her down.
That's a relief. She was okay. Although you've totally blown the ending, Henry. That was science writer Henry Nichols with the story of thallium. Next time, to the element that suits someone who doesn't want to blow up the world, maybe just a small bit of it.
When it comes to practical uses, this silvery substance is an excellent neutron emitter. This makes it handy for kick-starting nuclear reactors, where a high neutron flow is required to get the chain reaction going. It also means that, in principle, californium would make effective small-scale nuclear weapons, requiring as little as 5 kilograms of californium-251 to achieve critical mass, about half the amount of plutonium required for a bomb.
That's the story of californium, which, apart from its use potentially as a nuclear weapon, is also useful for finding gold and striking oil. And you can join us on next week's Chemistry in Its Element to find out how. I'm Chris Smith, thank you for listening, and goodbye!
Chemistry in Its Element is brought to you by the Royal Society of Chemistry and produced by thenakedscientists.com. There's more information and other episodes of Chemistry in Its Element on our website at chemistryworld.org/elements.